moving into the big city.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. The U.S. government may soon own as much as 40% of Citigroup. Sources say the deal will be announced today. Taxpayers have given Citi $45 billion and bought some preferred shares. Reportedly, the government would convert some of that to common shares if private investors will do the same. That would give the bank more capital and a better chance of passing its so-called stress test. 40% government ownership may not be a majority, but Peter Hahn with the Cass School of Business says it is a dramatic move.
The government is not just taking an equity stake at 40%. Citi's deposits are guaranteed. The hand of the government really is all over the institution. The real risk is being borne by the taxpayer.
The government's bailout of AIG, it's not going so well. AIG reports fourth quarter earnings on Monday, and the only question is how many tens of billions of dollars it lost. Meanwhile, the company is struggling to pay back some of the billions it's borrowed from taxpayers. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports from Shanghai that AIG is a global machine trying to sell off its parts.
AIG is trying to sell its Asian life insurance division. It's asking $20 billion. The company China Life is interested, as is Temasek, the sovereign wealth fund of Singapore. AIG has a big footprint in Asia, in part because the company was born in Shanghai, circa 1919. Tony Tong of China Everbright Research says AIG's Asia slice is the crown jewel, especially the China part. It grows by 20% every year. So why would a firm unload its best cut of meat?
They need money to pay the loans for the debts. They have to sell something that is available.
AIG owes Uncle Sam $60 billion. In the last couple days, several potential bidders in Asia have bowed out. And if things get worse, there's talk the U.S. government will split up the parent company. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
President Obama wants to finance health care reform by rolling back tax cuts and deductions for people earning more than $250,000. Republicans say that tax increase will punish small businesses. How true is that? From the entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
Most of us know a lot of small business owners who don't make anything like $250,000. But that's beside the point, says Martin Regalia. He's chief economist for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Many of the most successful small businesses, the ones that are making money, growing, and are therefore able to create jobs, will come under this new tax.
But Roseanne Altshuler of the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center insists most small business owners will dodge this bullet completely. Among taxpayers who get most of their income from their own businesses, she says,
more than half have income below $30,000, and 80% make less than $100,000. So most business owners are safe from Obama's individual income tax increases.
In the end, it's the biggest small businesses that have the most to lose. A recent survey by the National Federation of Independent Business found that nearly half of business owners with 20 to 250 employees earn over $250,000. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The Dow slimmed down again yesterday, losing 89 points, just over 1%, to 7182. The S&P 500 was down 1.5%, and the NASDAQ dropped 2.33%. General Motors reported a $9.6 billion fourth quarter loss. Bankruptcy continues to be a threat there. Fannie Mae lost $25 billion last quarter and says it will need, more government money. European shares are down 1-2% this hour. Asian markets were mostly lower.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact, helping more than 250,000 small businesses and nonprofits succeed using email marketing. ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, a smart way to reach your customers. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
If you've done some traveling abroad, you may have bought some ethnic arts and crafts for your home. A mask from Mexico, a wood carving from Kenya. But are you sure they're authentic? Globalization means more and more African arts and crafts are being made in factories not in the countries they claim to be from. Gretchen Wilson reports from Johannesburg that real crafters are struggling to compete.
This sidewalk serves as a studio for African artist Boaz Majenga. He strings wires with tiny beads to make the distinctive animal sculptures this region's known for.
This one is a small leopard, and this is a lion.
He's asking $35 for this lion, about the size of a house cat. It's these skills that put bread on the table for his wife and sons, and his extended family.
I think it's nearly 20 people. They depend on me, so I need to support them.
Many of the 1 million traditional craft artists in South Africa might otherwise be unemployed, but they pump more than $300 million a year into the economy. It's tough for them to compete with Chinese manufacturers who flood the market with cheaper replicas.
They can buy things at a cheaper price, then they can go there and remake it, and they make profit out of us.
And they do, at shopping malls like this one in Johannesburg, where shelves are loaded with foreign-made baskets, beaded jewelry, and wooden giraffes, all mass-produced. Priscilla Nioni is with Craft Yorona, a company that promotes local artists.
It's something that has been happening for years now, and our government hasn't been intervening.
She says there's more at stake than just employment.
That's African identity, and they're actually stealing it.
Artists sometimes turn to copyrights and intellectual property laws to protect their work, but that's expensive, so African artists are easily exploited, especially the rural poor. Anitra Nettleton is an art historian at Wits University.
They don't have access to the kinds of legal ways of protecting their designs, and so anyone can use them because there's nothing to stop, and that's immoral.
South Africa's artists are trying to innovate to keep one step ahead of look-alike imports. They say it's now up to consumers to make sure they're buying the real thing. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Hope you have a great Friday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.